Reading suffer a second consecutive home defeat as Blackburn leave the Medeski Stadium with all 3 points and a 1-0 win. Is this a true derailing of Nigel Atkins' automatic promotion hopes? Never mind that, are we still going to make the playoffs? Beyond all that, we look ahead to next Saturday's game with Yeovil and ask whether Nigel Atkins is going to make any team changes. We look around the latest news in the club, including more rumours of the takeover and potential interest in buying the club from Sir John Medeski. In Pub Chat, we look at who's the Reading's most important manager of all time. As well as that, we answer all of your tweets and emails, all in the Tullis Den podcast, episode number 24. Right, so before we get on to that, matter of procedural business. In case you're new to the show, my name's Dan Wimbush, otherwise known as Wimb. I run the TileLessEnd.com website, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Yeah, I'm here. The mainstays are still here.
Indeed. Last week, we had five people hosting the show
or joining us. We had our usual co-host, Johnny Williams. We had former host, Paul Williams, and we had former Reading midfielder, Simon Osborne, on the show. So it was a bumper show, but this week we've cut them adrift and gone back to the core team.
Yeah, I think there's something that might happen in the real side as well. A bit of cut back to old players, really.
Yeah, we've gone for
two up front.
Two up.
Everyone else off.
Indeed. So, no, in all seriousness, Johnny is ill today.
So our best wishes to him. Paul's obviously still in Germany, probably enjoying another set of German wins. I think Schalke are playing Real Madrid at home tonight.
I bet he's drinking the old German beers, if I know Paul.
Yeah, and rightly you should do.
And our thanks to last week's interview guest, which was Simon Osborne, former Reading midfielder.
And having listening back to it again this week, an interview I really enjoyed, Westy.
Yeah, it was interesting. I like hearing from the old players. I like hearing from anyone who was around Reading at any point in our history, because it's good to learn from not the story you hear in the papers, but the story that from behind the scenes. And Simon Osborne, again, I was surprised that he only played 34 games for us, because for a player that was as good as he was, he made a big impact in a short amount of time.
Absolutely. And as I said, it's always good hearing those untold stories. And the further away they get from their playing career, the more they're happy to talk. I mean,
there it is.
I know you've done some interviews in the past. Dylan Kerr.
Yeah, Dylan Kerr was an amazing interview, because he spoke to me from, I think it was in South Africa at the time. He spoke for like 2 hours about his whole career from start to finish. And he just kept talking and talking. And every story come out with was either funny or interesting or quite poignant for the time it was told. But again, Trevor Seen as well, hearing about the end of his career, I interviewed, and A.D. Williams was the first one to come on the show, which must be a good 4 or 5 years ago now, and he went through all his career as well, and it's just interesting to hear their thoughts and what they think of the not just the new Reading, but the old Reading that I remember when I was a younger lad.
Yeah, and earlier this season we spoke to John Halls as well, again a player who didn't have a massive impact for Reading, but it was always nice just hearing his stories around his, you know, getting sent off for Arsenal on his debut and things like that.
Yeah, so exactly.
We'll do our best to get the Simon Osborne interview up, we'll get John Halls in, we'll try and get the links to some of the old interviews on the fan cast and the Rules Post.
They're all in there somewhere. I mean, I remember Trevor Seen, it wasn't the best of quality, but I put it up anyway because it was just interesting. If you can look past the season, it's not too bad.
Absolutely.
As I said, we'll keep an eye out on the TileLessEnd.com over the next couple of weeks, and we'll do our best to get those up for you. Or if you want to listen to the Simon Osborne interview itself, that's on last week's show, which is episode 23. Right, now we've recorded that intro for the second time.
I didn't know if he was going to tell them that. I normally do.
I'm going to pull the curtain back, yeah.
Technical issues. Johnny usually brings the recording equipment. He's not here.
No, he's quite off.
Yeah, and due to his illness, he's also cost us 7 minutes of our lives. Yeah. Thanks, Johnny.
Well, probably longer than that by the time we went back and started again.
Indeed, but no.
We recorded that intro for the second time. The first one was obviously better, we're going to say that.
Well, I'm not sure it was, to be honest, and you've done well to come up with it again, so you didn't write it down.
You know, fair enough. Right, anyway,
now that we've got that out of the way, the elephant in the room is Reading's 1-0 defeat against Blackburn on Saturday. Not the best of performances, Westy. As soon as the game ended for me, I tweeted, I thought Reading were out-thought by Blackburn because they'd done their homework on Reading, they shut down Gareth McCleary, and it was just a very professional performance, and they thoroughly deserved a result, if maybe not the win.
Yeah, well, we said last week that Blackburn were tough to break down when we was there. Again, they did make life difficult for us, and I just think our players didn't have another plan. They just were very much, well, this is our plan, oh, they've stopped us, what do we do now? And there was no way we was going to break him down. We didn't have a decent shot on goal, really. I think McInniff had two swipes at a ball more than anything, and he sort of missed it at both shots, one in the first half, one in the second. And we didn't trouble their goalkeeper. And if you don't go to trouble goalkeepers, you're not going to win games. And it was very much reminiscent of games earlier in the season where we couldn't break sides down. And I thought some of the bigger players didn't produce on the day. And that's what's going to, you're going to get beat in this league. That's the way it works.
Yeah, and you mentioned Joby McInniff. He's the player that's taken the most stick from the majority of fans for the performance. I centred my match report around him and called it a captain's performance because, for me, he summed up everything about that Reading team on Saturday. He was ridiculously hard-working. He gave 110% and he'd run through brick walls for Reading Football Club. There's no doubt about that. You can never fault Toby Mack enough for effort or application. Unfortunately, he's had a mare with the first goal. He's mishit headers, sold Gunter short. And Gunter's a bit unlucky, actually, because he makes a good tackle on Jordan Rhodes.
I thought he had made the tackle, and then he sort of fell over and got pushed over.
And Rhodes sort of fell onto Gunter and took him out. The ball breaks to Conway. Conway's shot. For you, was that going in before it hits Joby McEnough?
Again, from the angle I had on it, and I've seen the replay, which was inconclusive, I've no idea if it was going in. But, I mean, McEnough's tried to make up for his mistake, so you've got to give him credit there. But there's been a few goals that you can point at McEnough's direction. I think, was it Sheffield Wednesday when he got pushed off the ball and he stepped on it and they rolled through and he scored from that? I think that's happened two or three times. Sunderland, I think he gave a goal away. I might be wrong, but it's similar sort of circumstances where he stepped on a ball, got caught in possession. And he got caught in possession a few times this week as well. But there again, I didn't think Podgorevnek played particularly well. I think he huffed and puffed, but he couldn't blow the house down. And the problem is we haven't got no plan B. And we've said it earlier in the season, there's no ball over the top. There's no one in that side that can stretch them if you stop Gareth McCleary. And that's what they did.
And as I mentioned, stop Gareth McCleary and you've stopped Reading. And for me, there's just not enough creativity in the side. There's not enough intelligence from the players. I'm not talking about actual intelligence. I'm sure a few of them could go on countdown and have a good go. But in terms of judging the match situation, there's not enough flexibility in that side. They're very rigid. There was not enough. I mean, someone like Hobakpan should see that, there's a couple of men on Gareth McCleary. Maybe I should be carrying the ball forward a bit more.
Yep.
Or maybe we should be swapping wings a bit with McEnough and McCleary. Things like that. And it just didn't really happen. They didn't disrupt Blackburn's flow.
They stuck 10, well, not quite 10 men behind the ball, but they came with a game plan to get a point and maybe hope to nick a winner. They did just that. And I said,
no disrespect to Blackburn at all. I maybe thought they were fortunate to get 3 points, but you know, they figured Reading out and got what they came for.
Yeah, we say they were fortunate to get 3 points, but they worked McCarthy. I thought McCarthy made one decent save in the second half. Yeah, that was an excellent save. And they've had the shot that's gone in. We didn't have a shot that went in, so we didn't have a shot, really. It's the trouble of the goalkeeper. I was disappointed in it. And like you say, sometimes there's not enough quality when Reading go behind, especially at home, where teams think, we've got the lead, let's sit in and let's see if Reading can break us down. And we just couldn't. And even in the second half, I think Drenter had a shot where he probably should have got on target. But other than that, we didn't work their goalkeeper at all. And they had us at arm's length, I thought, most of the match.
Yeah, unfortunately so. I mean, credit to Nigel Adkins, he did try and change things up. He made a triple substitution early on in the second half. He brought on Danny Guthrie, Royston Drenter and Hal Robson-Kanu. None of them really worked. I mean, for me, I know we spoke a bit off-air about it, and I know what you're going to say about Royston Drenter. For me, I thought Drenter had a bit of a spark. He was at least trying to do something on the ball. Some will say maybe it was, you know, being a bit of a show pony, a bit of needless trickery, but he at least, for me, looked like he was trying to make something happen. Obviously, it didn't come off, and he had a bit of a scuffy shot at the far post, where he should have probably scored.
Mm.
He also had another one where he got the ball out of his feet and drove it just over the bar. I thought he just had a bit of a spark. Not brilliant, but there's glimmers that there's something there. And he did, for me, what I want a substitute to do. He offered something different, even if it didn't
work. To be honest, I thought they all offered something different because I thought the players they replaced were offering nothing at the time. I thought they all tried. You can't knock their endeavour again, but it just didn't work. And the players, the Blackburn players, had us, like I said, at arm's length. And Drenter, you know, I'm not a big fan of his. I think he's a bit of a show pony. And when he was on the ball, he tended to hit the floor quite a bit as well. And there's a lot of sort of gamesmanship from them and killing the game. Pretty much what Sheffield Wednesday done the week before, where they lied around on the floor quite a bit. And
oh, that was the worst bit of the game.
I mean, 9 minutes of injury time tells you all you need to know. There was a lot of gamesmanship there, but they just wanted to kill the game. We brought 3 subs on, tried to give us a spark, and they thought, right, let's lie around and kill the game dead. And that's what they've done, and they got a result. And if we would have got a result that way, we'd have took it. The only thing that you could say, any sort of controversy, I don't know if he's going to come on to it, was a penalty incident. I shouted like everyone else did, but I couldn't see what had happened. And even when I see the replay, it was inconclusive for me.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think there's controversy. I think it's a penalty.
From in real time, when there's a lot of players around you, for where the referee was, I'm not sure he could see it, and I'm not sure the linesman could see it, and in that case, you can't give it. And if we're banking on a penalty, which was, okay, might well have been, but it wasn't clear-cut from the official's point of view, I think if we're relying on that to get a point against Blackburn at home, then that's not good enough. And I think Gawk said something similar in the paper today, that even if it was a penalty, we should have done better on the day.
Yeah, I think Della asked him, you know, that's got to be a frustrating day. And I think Gork said, no, it's disappointing because we didn't, you know,
didn't create enough to win the game.
Just quickly on the penalty. Yeah,
it's a penalty. You can see from the angle that Redden have posted, it's a penalty. At the time, I thought it was a penalty and everyone in the ground did. And again, unfortunately, we're talking about refs making a mistake. But
as you said, and I will try and defend, I defended the ref a little bit on Hobnob. I said, when you actually look at where he is, he's got a crowd of players in front.
He can't see it.
Even the linesman's got, I think Lafondre's in front of the linesman at the time. They should be spotting it. But, you know, if you put somebody else in that position, chances are they might miss it as well. So,
again, it's hopefully Reading's luck's going to change because that's two games against Blackburn now.
We rode a few, definitely.
Exactly, and two red cards. So I did query whether we might just put in an appeal with the FA
to overturn the result.
To give us a penalty.
Use the bat phone we talked about last week.
It's worth a try. I think it's the only opportunity we would have got to get a point out of that game because we didn't do enough to win it ourselves.
No, exactly. Well, just before we move on then to look at some of the news around the club, does that result really worry you? Or are you happy to sort of pass that off as a bit of a blip given the recent form?
Well, it's Reading all over. I think we talked about this last week where they go to QPR and get an amazing result and then over to Blackburn, you expect them to win. They end up letting us down. I think we said it, and we've said
it. We said it as soon as we predicted all wins.
Said it for years. Yeah, as soon as we predicted all wins. Again, it's the Championship. You get games like that. Reading aren't good enough to go storming through that league and win 10, 15 matches on the trot like they did when they come from well behind earlier, a couple of years ago. It's the Championship for you. I think all teams are pretty much the same, and just on the day, anyone could beat anyone, and that's the way it turned out again. I just don't think Reading, on that day, had enough quality to beat Blackburn, and Blackburn got lucky and killed the game, so...
No, unfortunately, as you mentioned, I mean, Blackburn will still very much think they're still in the playoff race.
Plenty up there.
Wigan are on absolute fire at the moment. Now they're not playing in Europe.
Yeah, I think it's something I said earlier in the season that Wigan will come out of that pack at some point. They've got too many good players not to.
Yeah, Brighton have got quality.
Even teams like Leeds will still think they've got a sniff. I know Leeds signed Connor Wickham today as we record this. So, Reading are going to be in a real scrap. But at least as football fans, it's exciting.
At least we're in the scrap.
Exactly. Yeah. So, as Nigel Atkins has said all season, it was about getting into the race, staying in the race till March, April and seeing where we are. And we're in that. And I think we're going to get stronger as the season goes on because we're going to get more players back.
You'd hope so. And I think it's about time some of the players that, especially on Saturday, come off the bench, started stepping up and proving that they are Premier League footballers.
Yeah, and we'll have a bit of a discussion on who may
come into the team or may not come into the team a little bit later on when we read out some of your tweets and emails. But for now, let's move on to a couple of latest bits of news from around the club.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to latest news. Again, no Charles Watts this week. We're just keeping him for special occasions. He's very much our...
he's our Drenthe. We bring him in last 10
that's
minutes.
That's not a very choice Drenthe. He's better than that. Yeah. He's better than that. He's
Adam
LaFondre, he's our super sub.
Is that you? Okay, I'm sure we'll take that.
Indeed. No, seriously, I said Charles isn't off the show. If there is big breaking news and things like that, we'll certainly be more than happy to get Charles back on the show. But I don't know if you heard it earlier this week. You may not have. I teased it in last week's show that we were launching a bit of a mini podcast, the Tarlhurst Podcast Extra, where it was just me and Charles. And we launched that on Friday. So it was about 15 minutes, just me catching up with Charles, getting a bit of a roundup of all the latest news. Because Charles goes down to Hogwood, speaks to Nigel Atkins and the players on a Thursday. Now, we record this on a Wednesday night. And so when we were speaking to Charles, unfortunately, we didn't really have many fresh lines to bring you. So the whole idea was that we'd speak to Charles on a Friday and get that up later that day.
We thought we was killing it with him, let's put it that way.
Well, you know.
Basically, we thought we'd get the latest news and give you something to listen to. It's only a 15-minute show. It goes up on Friday afternoon. So stay tuned for that this Friday.
Where we'll catch up with Charles on all the very latest from the training ground and news around the club. But
it's much more current, isn't it, if we put it on the Friday?
Oh, very much so. And it gives you an extra... How can you not want more of this delicious podcast?
More. Indeed. It'll never be enough.
Yeah, extra value. And it's all free.
All free. You can't complain.
All free, indeed.
So stay tuned for that on Friday and all details will be up on the website. But, you know, in Charles' absence, we'll talk over a couple of the news stories.
One of them that he's put up in the paper today is that apparently there's fresh interest in Reading Football Club. Now,
as much as I'd love Westy to talk in depth about this latest takeover news, for me, I'm
almost over it.
I think even the pictures were inconclusive. It could have been just a couple of mates come down to watch the game for all we know. It wasn't really, there was no sort of solid leads, was there? It was just, there was two guys that no one really recognised sat in the director's box. could have been me and you dressed up for all anyone knows, really. So it's not even a story. I think someone's clutching at straws there down at
I wonder if we went to Sir John Badowski and just said we were rich investors looking to invest in the club. We get a free ticket for the year.
Should we be the old fake shakes that used to have in the sun turn up? I think we should do that.
I think we'd get off better if we tried to be the fake Americans, wear some big like Texan hats and cowboy boots and stuff.
Big hands. No story.
There could very well be something in it. And go on to the Get Reading website, getreading.co.uk. Charles has written up the story. Basically, it's two, people that people don't recognise, but Chris Samuelson, who's, you know, was the man who sort of linked Anton with Sir John. So
what are Indian investors? I did hear that somewhere.
They were of Asian origin. I don't know. I can't tell you where they're from, unfortunately. I said, look at the picture. Ultimately, it doesn't matter where they're from. The only thing I particularly care about is, do they have Reading's interests at heart? Are they serious about the club? And after the Anton Zagarevich affair, do they actually have any money?
Yeah.
That's the key. That's the key one, that one, if they've got any money.
And beyond all of this, you know, how long have we been talking about this?
Since episode one of this podcast about fresh investment and things. So I'm sorry, I'm a little bit over it, because until these people, whoever it is that buys the club,
shows us they've got money.
Yeah, show their hand.
Exactly. Then I'm, you know, look at...
After all we went through with Anton Zagarevich, with all of his big plans and all of his apparent early spending spree and everything Anton Zagarevich did, within 2 years, it's all fallen apart.
Yeah, it's amazing though, because he looked so credible, didn't he? And he spoke, said the right things, and even brought in the sort of players he said he was going to bring in, and then all of a sudden it just all crashes down around us. Again, it happens at lots of clubs. I think Leeds, for example, have had two or three new owners in the last 2 or 3 years. It's just hope that somebody does their own work this time and we get a chairman that has got our best interests in that and wants to do well for Reading. So I think Reading's a great club to buy.
A lot of people have been criticising Sir John Badowski because he basically came out this week and said, I'm not going to make the same mistake again. And it's the first real time that he's kind of admitted that he made a mistake with Zagarevich.
Yeah.
Do you blame Sir John at all for what's happened, or do you think, you know, it was beyond his control?
No, I don't think he should blame himself, really. I think Zagarevich said all the right things. He had a Reading link. They said he had the money. I'm sure he must have put up a certain amount of money in the first place. And I don't think anyone had any reason to believe that he wasn't going to stump up the rest. His dad's very rich. Where the money comes from, we didn't know. And I'm sure Madesi didn't know that. But once he sold half the club to him, I'm sure with what was going on and the plans he had all lined up, I'm sure John Madesi, like the rest of us, thought he's going to follow through with him. Now, he hasn't, for one reason or another, and I'd like to know the reason, because it seems so credible at the time.
Yeah, and, you know, we've touched on this in recent weeks. Personally, I'm very happy that Sir John's still there. I understand
that, well, I mean, I don't know this, but it certainly appears that Sir John hasn't really got the money anymore to be pumping in tens of millions of pounds a year. I presume he'd be able to keep Reading afloat.
I think the wage bill must frighten Sir John Madejski nowadays, because it must be huge compared to when he was more at the helm, let's put it that way.
Yeah, well,
just look at the amount they jumped up to, even in our promotion year, yet alone the Premier League year. It's frightening. And thank God Reading have got another 3 years worth of parachute payments, because if it was back to the old system of two,
you'd be in big trouble.
They would be very much in big trouble, and they probably would have been selling in January. So, Sir John's still in the helm. He's going to do his best. And hopefully, as the story that Charles published, that there are rumours that Reading have signed an exclusivity agreement with this group. Whether it's the people in the picture, we don't know. But that's the rumour. They've signed an exclusivity agreement that they'll be solely negotiating with these parties to sell the club and provide fresh investment. Whether it happens, we don't know. We'll talk about it more when it now happens. And obviously, we'll very much ask Charles about all the details on Friday's Tyler Send podcast extra. So tune in for that. But in the meantime,
I said it. Just have to go by what we've got.
Yeah, but I mean, if I had millions and millions, and not just because I'm from Reading and support them, I think when you look at Reading, it's a good club to buy. You know, I mean, they've been sort of yo-yoing. They're always in the top half of the Championship, and they've got some decent players. They've got assets. You haven't got to build a ground. The training ground's sorted. You know what I mean? It's a good club to buy. You haven't got to put a lot in to get it going, because it's already going. But I think if the Omani group and the American groups have been put to one side, then obviously they weren't that interested, so maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah,
unless it is them.
Just hopefully they're
welcome.
They're probably doing their homework. That's all we can hope for. And as I said, that at the end of the day, whatever happens, that Reading get the right buyers in for the club.
Yep.
Now, sort of linked to the takeover, I suppose, has been the news again, which you can read on the tylersend.com, and I'll get Reading, that contract renewals are on hold basically Reading are saying, look, we're not negotiating with you at the moment to players out of contract this year and beyond because they don't know what the state of the football club's going to be.
Well, that makes perfect sense, really.
Yeah. It's not brilliant because it leads to a bit of uncertainty, especially as you get in towards the summer, and I'm sure the agents are already going to be starting to think, well, if Reading haven't got any money, maybe, you know, I should be starting to work on trying to find a club for my player this summer. But
I will say this, though. I think, I'm never going to read some of them out here, for the players that are out of contract, I think they'll be let go whether Reading get promoted, get new investors, or stay in a championship anyway. Because I think, in a way, it gives Reading a perfect opportunity to say, well, we can't renegotiate with you at the moment because we don't know what's going on. But really, they wasn't going to renegotiate with them anyway.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at this. If say Reading had limitless funds anyway, yeah, and regardless what division in, would you keep these players? Stuart Taylor?
No.
Wayne Bridge?
No.
Kaspers Gorks?
No.
Michael Hector?
Yes.
Lawson Diath?
Probably not.
Mikael Leisurewood?
Definitely not.
Jeremy McEnough?
No.
Jake Taylor?
Yes.
Jason Roberts?
No.
Gozie Ogwu?
No. So there you go. So that's just me going through them. Now, most of these players are either just on the fringes, sort of getting towards the end of their careers, or young players that haven't made an impact. Jake Taylor, you've got to give him some time because he's been on the bench and he's looked half decent when he's come on. Other than that, I think Reading are playing a shrewd game here, really, because I don't think they're going to renegotiate contracts with them, and they've gotten a good excuse not to do it at the moment.
Yeah.
And also, it keeps players on their toes, you know. McEnough, Gorks, they've got to be putting in good performances because they're thinking, I want to stay here.
Yeah, very much so. And well, for me, it completely depends how they perform and where we are this time next season. Because if they're slashing budgets left, right and centre and they're going to be forced to sell players, like, you don't know, someone might buy Sean Morrison and suddenly Kaspers Gorks becomes a steady, dependable head.
Yeah, there is that. But that just getting rid of them alone, it would cut the wage bill quite a bit. I mean, Wayne Bridge...
I think the likes of Leisurewood and Roberts, who have been injured...
It's pointless keeping them.
Yeah, absolutely. And Stuart Taylor... We don't really need a very experienced goalkeeper as a third.
A young lad, I do.
He's probably drawing a decent wage, and we can't really afford to carry players like that. They're already carrying four good goalkeepers.
I think what's more interesting is the players that are out of contract next year.
Because
if you look at some of them are sellable assets. I mean, I think McCarthy's one of them, 2015.
Yeah, all of the goalkeepers, basically.
All the goalkeepers. So you look at, I reckon, McCarthy, if we don't get promoted, I think it'd be sold. Even if we have got an investment, because I think they think Federici is good enough to play in the championship.
Federici's on huge wages as well.
Yeah, I think they think that's all right. We either renegotiate a new contract with Federici or we get a new goalkeeper. Who else have we got? Sean Cummins, 2015.
Chris Gunter.
He'd be let go. Chris Gunter, I think they're going to renegotiate with him. I think the
Kelly Pierce.
That's what I'm saying. It's more interesting next year. Guthrie.
Carajan. McCleary.
I mean,
are a lot of saleable assets,
there's
Reading.
There's a lot of saleable assets there, and I think they're only 1 year left on the contract. You might find a few of them getting sold.
Well, this is it. This is why it's bad that you can't renegotiate, because ideally, as like Arsenal famously find out year on year, they suddenly get to this point where they're like, oh,
well, if we don't sell them now...
We're going to get nothing for them.
Yeah, and you almost have to make that decision quite early in the summer as well, because that's when teams have got all their budgets, so... It's when teams are going to spend £7 million on a winger or whatnot. So
It just gets show up in the air it is, because all of a sudden, if, say, some of them names we just called out get sold, your Guthrie's, your McCleary's, your McCarthy in goal, then some of them players that look like they were going to get pushed out the door, like your McEnough, they get another year. Yeah. You know what I mean? We can only speculate, but I think at the moment, judging by the players that are out of contract this year, forgetting next year, Reading are playing a shrewd game, thinking, well, you know what, we're not going to keep these anyway. But we'll keep them hanging on until the end of the season. Hopefully, they're putting some decent.
This is going to be arguably, and some people might accuse me of saying this, I think this is possibly the most important 3-4 months
in Reading Football Club's history for where they're going.
Because if Reading don't get promoted,
don't sort out suitable fresh investment. Let's not beat around the bush here.
Reading are going to be a very average team next year.
Yeah, and you have a lot of players that are not particularly happy.
And we have been very sport in the last 10, 12 years, knowing nothing but success.
Yep. There's no reason to say Reading won't end up with a few years in the wilderness. Or, again, look what happened when they broke that 95 team up. They went suddenly from second place to, 16th, 17th?
Yeah, and like I say, in a championship, it doesn't take a lot. If you drop two or three players, you can end up in the bottom six or seven easily.
You look at teams that have done well and competed in playoffs, teams like Sheffield United, who had a very expensively assembled squad, got to a playoff final, lost it. And, you know, they dropped, you know, down the leagues quickly. And
well, the takeover,
Bristol City as well.
The takeover's key again, because if we get to the end of the season, we still haven't got a new investor. We know Medeci's not going to invest. We've got players out of contract going to let go to cut the wage bill. You've got players like Drinta that are going to be sat there on big wages still. And
he might not be able to shift.
And no one's going to want, because he's proved nothing to nobody. You've got one celebrity asset in your goalkeeper and your winger. Well, two celebrity assets in your winger. And
maybe Lafondre.
Maybe Lafondre, but even so, I still don't think you get much more than 2.5-3 million for him, because I don't think anyone's going to stump up any more than that for him. So, again, you haven't got a lot to sell. And if you do sell him, you've got a side that's not that good and full of youngsters.
Well, that's it. I said, for me, absolutely pivotal 3 months. And they can solve most of these problems by winning the playoffs.
Yeah.
So
it's all your problems.
No pressure, lads.
Yeah, so it's all your problems. And then you've got another 5 or 6 years of relative success, hopefully, because you will have new investment because they're coming from the Sky money.
Yeah. Well, as I said, it's going to be a fascinating few months. So we'll get more on any potential takeover talk with Charles on Friday's podcast extra.
I think the amazing thing is, though, if you look at that and you just come up with a dilemma like we did, and we're doing it hypothetically and in our own, well, in your own lounge.
Yeah.
How difficult it is to balance a side. No, I'm right. We've got to keep a certain amount of young players. We've got certain players that are getting over the hill.
We can push to one side. Nicky Hammond is going to earn his wage this summer.
It is tricky to run a football club, especially with the fact that there's so much uncertainty at the moment.
Yeah. All we can do is sit here and watch and comment as it happens. But as I said, tune into the podcast extra on Friday. All the details will be up on thetarlesden.com and get more of that. But before we move on to some of your emails and tweets, it's time for this week's Pub Chat.
The view from the Tarhurst end. Recapping all this week's action.
Right, welcome back to Pub Chats. Not had Pub Chat properly for a couple of weeks with the draft and the Simon Oswald interview and bits and pieces. So, yeah. But, Matt Cox emailed in and gave us a few suggestions for Pub Chat, which we very much encourage everybody to do. It's your show and we're very much happy to discuss whatever you want us to discuss.
And it's nice for us not to have to come up with any ideas.
Yeah, well, there is that, indeed. Well, no, to be fair, I commute up and down the M4 every morning, and every morning there seems to be an accident or something, so I've had a lot of time to think.
Yeah, it's funny, actually, because when I used to do the show, I used to have the same amount of time on my hands when I was at work, and I'd be constantly thinking, what can we do this week, what can we do this week? I'm glad that you got to do that now.
Yeah, well, as I said, we've leaned on the listeners.
That's it.
And thanks to Matt Cox, he's come up with a few suggestions that we'll fit in over the next few weeks. One of them, he suggested that maybe we actually do that fantasy, the worst fantasy team draft. And I think that could be one for
end
of the season, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we have a few more options than we did for the best side anyway. That's for sure.
Stay tuned for that. But this week, he suggested that a discussion he frequently has with his mates down the pub is who was Reading's most important manager. Mm. Now, there's a difference between being the best manager and the most important.
Yeah.
So, for example, you can say, well, Ian Bramford won the Simod Cup, but did he actually do that much to progress the football club? Or
that's when I first started going, when Ian Bramford took over. I think Morris Evans was quite influential in Reading, certainly getting further up the lower leagues than they had in the past. Because let's face it, it's only been the last sort of 30 years that Reading have had any success whatsoever, apart from being in the last two leagues. And I remember the Bramford Out campaign as well, because my dad led it with his Bramford Out t-shirt, from what I remember rightly. So Ian Bramford was the manager when I started going, and he won a cup with us.
Led the record-breaking Royals as well.
Record-breaking Royals. He had a good side there. We played a certain type of football. Everyone was playing it at them days. It was get it forward, get it wide, and get it in. And we pretty much played the same now, really. But we won the Simod Cup with him, and we was at the highest league position until more recent years that we ever got to. So you'd have to say that he certainly made an impact on the club.
Other names, obviously, I think we'll all dismiss it. Portfield.
Yeah,
at his reign.
Yeah, he took over soon after that. It was not so good.
But since that, and we should say as well, I can't really talk about people. Portfield was before my time, but it's sort of recent enough to look at. But before him, I said people like Morris Evans and people like that, can't really talk about, because
I think Morris Evans
on our time.
Yeah, I think Morris Evans, a little bit about him, but I think Morris Evans had quite a big impact on the club, not only as manager but as scout and coach. Yeah. And he'd done a lot of work for Reading and Oxford as well.
He's got a plaque on the ground.
Yeah, he did sort of turn things around for us from being a sort of fourth division side, and did have some relative success for what Reading were then. You said Ian Bramford come in, won a cup, and it's the only cup we've won to date. We haven't even won a playoff final yet, so we haven't even won that.
Hey, we've won the Barks and Bucks Senior Cup.
We've won that, once? Or twice, maybe? But yeah, they
didn't even win that cup against Oman.
No, couldn't even manage that. But no, yeah, I see what you're saying. But no, we can't really talk too much about him. I mean, Bradford was manager when I was young and I started going. Then we had Porterfield. I think the first man of influence who created a start to what we've got now was Mark McGee, because when Medeski came here, and obviously that would be a big turning point in Reading's history. Mark McGee come in, unknown manager, was still playing. His stomach doesn't happen anymore, player managers, so much anyway, not in the league.
No.
He had a big billing. He was quite good. He played European Cup football with Aberdeen. He was a striker. He come in with new ideas and he changed Reading radically from a side that was get the ball forward, get it up and under and chase after it. He moved out some of the players like Trevor Senior, sort of the players that we all loved, basically. And he brought in some fresh ideas and he brought in, Simon Osborne mentioned it in a player I mentioned quite a lot, he brought in Darius Dovcek. He had a good crop of youngsters come through and without any money, he turned a side that were struggling into a very, very good team that probably should have ended up in the Premier League.
Absolutely.
That was a massive turning point in Reading's history and that put us on the map, really.
And as Simon Osborne hinted at last week as well, that what McGee did was really set the club up, almost set them up financially quite well because he managed to turn players like Simon Osborne from less than £100,000 signing to a £1 million player.
Xhaka
got a million. I think we got £750,000 for Scott Taylor. Yeah. Obviously, Eddie Williams started before McGee, but he turned into a £750,000 pound player.
He flourished under McGee and he flourished with Darius Dovcek at the side of him because Williams would learn his trade from players like Martin Hicks and that. Mm. And I think Williams himself would tell you, when Dovcek came in and started doing step overs and I mean, people don't remember Eddie Williams playing in both stints for Reading. He used to do this thing where he used to pretend he was going to head of the ball and let it go over his shoulder. That's the sort of thing he would never have dreamed of doing until Dovcek came and showed him a different way to defend.
So McGee's certainly up there. Then we went through a bit of a wilderness. Obviously, Jim and Mick did their best. I don't think we're going to... They kept Reading in Division 1 for a few years, so that was good.
They should have gotten promoted, to be fair to them. They was unlucky in the playoff final.
Yeah, and
it could have been different. It was carrying it on, but... Once that season finished, they had to sell the best players. And it's the thing we were just talking about a second ago. What you're going to do, all of a sudden you go from second to struggling to stay in the division.
And then after that, Terry Bullivan, no.
One of the worst appointments ever. And the next one, Tommy Burns. I think we all at the time thought this is such a great capture for Reading FC to get a manager who was fairly big build, especially across the border. He was Celtic manager. And I think we all thought, when all these players started coming, we thought, wow, this is going to be a turning point. It was, but not in a good way.
It would have been really interesting for me because, I don't know if you remember, Tommy Burns was actually offered, I think he was offered the job that summer before Bullivant took it. But he said, no, I want to go and work with, I think it was Kenny Dalglish.
Yeah.
To be Newcastle's youth team manager.
That's right, yeah.
Mentoring Paul Brayson. Jimmy Crawford.
Mentoring all those superstars.
So obviously that his youth team skills were great. Yeah. But yeah, he turned Reading down, but then they came calling in the March when Reading were pretty much doomed and he took over and couldn't save them from relegation. And then suddenly, Reading's position changed under Tommy Burns, God rest his soul. They went from being a very small team in a ramshackle stadium in Div 1 to suddenly a really big fish in Division 2 with a brand spanking new, one of the best stadiums. It's safe to say it was one of the best stadiums in the country when it opened.
The best stadium in that league. Yeah. And I think a lot of teams looked at it as their Wembley final when they played Reading. And with a manager of his importance in that era, players would definitely know who he was because he managed a big club. They were big hits then, Reading became big hits. And that made it difficult for him, especially when we'd been relegated and we didn't have the best of sides, let's face it.
Yeah, not speaking of the dead, but unfortunately, he was fairly useless at Reading. Because
I think the problem was, though, he'd come from a different football. He'd come from a top league at the time. Certainly were big hitters then. You'd have to say they were there or thereabouts most of the time. And they were always winning the league. He'd come from a big league. He'd been at Newcastle in a big club. And he'd come down three divisions in English football. And I don't think he had a clue what to expect from it. And the players that he brought in certainly weren't up to the job.
Well, I think he basically put an end to any notion of Medici ever spending big on players again. You look at the money that man wasted. And unfortunately, he's had more money than even someone like probably Brian McDermott in his 3 years in the Championship.
Yeah.
Spent £750,000 on Forster, £750,000 on Murty, £500,000 on Sean Evers. And just all of these players, I think it was about £700,000 on Jim McIntyre.
Yeah.
Loads of money. Bear in mind...
Did he say Murty? Yeah, he did.
Nearly £750,000. Bear in mind, this is Division 2 days.
Yeah, it was big money.
That's big money. And
they spend that now on players sometimes.
Exactly, that's what I mean. Yeah. Look how much Nigel Atkins had to spend.
Yeah.
And he wasted it. And Reading were useless for a year and a half in that league under him. They had a bit of a bump in the second half of his first proper season, but they couldn't get there.
Well, the problem was, once he spent that money and then players didn't produce, no one wanted them, so you couldn't get rid of them.
Yeah.
And Murty got injured fairly early in his...
As did Forster.
Yeah, badly. And that obviously that cost us quite dearly. But it was hard to recover from that, and it didn't happen until I think it was Pardew took over, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I think he could go down as an important manager, just in, unfortunately, burning Medeski's hand.
Yeah.
I think that's why Medeski was in Malaysia as well.
Yeah, his little tax break.
His tax break.
Yeah.
We'll take care of that. I said Burns sacked, and this arguably started the cycle that we've seen through to probably up to when Nigel Atkins got appointed. They didn't go
for a big name again. They went for Alan Pardew, who was reserve team manager.
He was sacked or...
I think he disbanded the youth team.
That was it.
Or the reserve team. And they went for Coppell. Originally had... went for Pardew. Had John Gorman as his assistant.
That's right.
And that is arguably where the Reading's recent success story started, because he got Reading playing really good football at the end of that season he took over. I think they won something stupid like 10 games out of the last 15 or something ridiculous. It's really set them up for the following season.
It was a different philosophy, wasn't it? I think it was the first start of the slogans and the training methods were different.
Snazzy spirit flair.
That's it. And Pardew was a bit more of a scrapper. You know what I mean? He'd been played in low leagues. He played in the non-league. And he was more of a scrapper of a footballer. And he was more of a scrapper as a manager. And I mean, he's at Newcastle now, rightly or wrongly. Sometimes I wonder how he got there. But he turned that club around. He gave him a different ideas. John Gorman with him to start with. I think he had some personal problems at the time and he moved aside.
Martin Allen.
And then Martin Allen came in, who again was, they called him Mad Dog. And they called him Mad Dog for a reason, because at times you thought he was nuts. But at that point, it did help Reading, because they had this spirit all of a sudden. It all came back, and it was, you'd have players running through the home end and kicking balls at the away team and just generally being mischievous and a pain, and teams didn't like it and it got under their skin. And Reading, again, they brought some decent strikers in. I think Butler and Curran come around about that time, did they?
Yeah.
And then they started winning games, and once you start winning games, it's easy to keep winning games, and it definitely had a great run under Pardew.
Yeah, and probably he produced probably one of my favourite seasons, other than the 05-06 season, was the year we got to the playoff final. I know we didn't win the playoff final, lost to Walsall, but Curran and Butler were scoring goals for fun.
Yeah.
Didn't we score something like, I think, 4 goals in 3 consecutive home games? Yeah. It was, you know, they were beating teams left, right and centre.
Yeah, Nicky Forster sat on the bench as well, come on and make an impact.
That season.
I mean, it was a different level completely.
And the following season, they did get promoted. They should have won the league. They bottled it basically late on to Brighton, but they crept over the line. And again, in one of my favourite Reading games ever, winning at Brentford. So, and the following season, I don't think any other Reading manager has had 4 consecutive seasons where they've got better, 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 better.
Yeah.
And Pardew had that. To take Reading from lower relegation fodder at Division 2 to a playoff semi-final in Division 1 in the space of, was it, 4 seasons, is ridiculous.
It was an amazing achievement, yeah. And obviously, this well documented how he left the club. And we thought maybe that was the end of the bounce, but it didn't happen that way. In fact, the bounce carried on. I mean, it took a little while for Coppell to get him going, but once he did, you know what happened. We got 106 points. We went into the Premier League.
Yeah, and Steve Coppell will be the obvious choice for a lot of people, because, as I said, he's the first man to ever lead us into the Premier League. Obviously, then an 8th place finish and whatnot. But it's maybe slightly revisionist, but I do look at Coppell's reign now with a bit of time behind it and think, could he not have done a bit more?
I think, like anything, I think the foundation was set for him, and he didn't, it wasn't like Pardew where they was at rock bottom. He took them over when they was okay, you know what I mean? They was steady. I think what he done was amazing. I think things with Coppell, he had what some of the others didn't. He had experience and he knew what it took to get teams up and in the Premier League. And I think maybe he'd say himself that on occasions, not only with us, but when he has been a Premier League manager, maybe he didn't have quite enough. I know he had a great time with Crystal Palace, but it was a long time ago. And I think he just had that knack of knowing who to get, what's going to work, and he stuck to it rigidly. And I thought that football we played on the Coppell was fantastically exciting. And I think he had good players. And not only that, he had good players to come in and replace the players that were on the pitch. And maybe some of the other managers didn't have the budget or the time to sort of put that team
together. I can't knock him for what he's done. But as I said, looking at his later years, not buying players in the second year in the Premier League.
Mistakes were made.
No Reading managers are ever going to have such a platform to build on. Hopefully they will, but it's how many other Reading managers are ever going to have a position where they've just finished 8th in the Premier League? and have got a guaranteed another season of Premier League football to build on.
But what he had that a lot of, well, all of the other managers didn't have, he had players that he picked out of the wilderness. They got themselves into the Premier League, and well done to them, and all credit to them. And players that probably weren't Premier League footballers, Sonko, Hunt, I didn't think they ever were, but they used to work hard and they was good at what they'd done. And the system he put them in, they could do what they was told to do, which was excellent. But the other managers didn't have the fact that when these players got to the Premier League, all of a sudden they thought they were Premier League footballers, they got a big beef for their boots, and they would come demanding stuff. And I don't think Koppel expected that. And I think he trusted them players, which would end up being his mistake, to carry what he'd set up on, and it didn't happen. And once he had to start buying players in that were big-time Charlies, it just collapsed the whole in it together.
And by the end of his reign, he looked completely lost, wasn't he? I mean,
you're throwing Simon Church in your final game as your last. You kind of know that
you're just about out of ideas, and he left at the right time.
Yeah,
I said, don't get me wrong, this isn't me slagging off Steve Koppel, but in the framework of most important managers, this gets us into, well, two other managers.
One that might well go down as one we let get away, Brendan Rodgers. Now, we could be sitting here in 3 months' time talking about how Brendan Rodgers won the league
with Liverpool.
He only done poorly with us. And again, a lot of people said when he got the sack, it was just the point where it looked like he was getting them going to a certain extent. They're just starting to turn the corner a little bit. And again, what did Brendan Rodgers have to deal with? He had a young team. He had a side that were on its knees, basically. And he was told to bring in young players and he wasn't given any money. Mm. And for Brendan Rodgers to have the philosophy of football that he has got, he has to have players that can implement that. So maybe he will look back and think, my mistake was thinking Brendan could be a footballing side like that. And he didn't get the time to do it anyway.
And he said in interviews since, he's learned a lot from his time at Reading. Yeah. And you can see that because of what he's done at other clubs now. And he said he's gone on. And people are frequently saying, well, he's had the players there to do it at Swansea and the players there to do it at Liverpool. But
you still got to organise them to do it, though.
But exactly. And Kenny Dalglish had those players at Liverpool. Yeah, and Liverpool.
And look at Michael Laudrup at Swansea within 18 months, that team's back in relegation.
David Moyes had the Premier League champions and they're struggling to win a game now.
Should
Reading have sacked Brendan Rodgers is probably a discussion for another day. If you go onto the tylehurstend.com and search Brendan Rodgers, you'll find a big article I've written on basically why it was the wrong time, as you've said.
Yeah, it was just the wrong time. I think if he was to come back tomorrow, I don't think anyone would remember it. You know what I mean? It's just unfortunate for him. He came at just at the wrong time. And then what happened after that was great because McDermott came in and we went back into the Premier
League. And this is it. And for me, alongside McGee and Koppel, this guy is one of our best ever managers, Brian McDermott. Now, Brian McDermott, he said, came in another time where Reading were, again, had no money.
Yeah,
they were in deep relegation trouble, a bit like what happened with Pardew. And he turned them again, got them absolutely flying. Following season, playoff final.
Following season, champions. And then, obviously got relegated.
Yeah, and then I thought, again, it was a bridge too far for him as a manager. I thought we looked a bit naive in the Premier League. And again, it's come down to experience. You only get that experience from experiencing it. And okay, we failed. But again, we never had the players to start, really. And even to make a go of it, we've done all right, really. Yeah.
And he got the very most out of the players he had. He got the most out of Jimmy Kebbe. He got the most out of Shane Long.
Yeah, they wanted to play for him.
Gilfie Sigurdsson, great. And he signed some other great players like Leisurewood. As much as people knock him, I think you're forgetting him. The job he did, and he turned Matt Mills into a £5 million player.
Yeah, yeah. God knows how, but well done for that.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's taken longer than I thought. I think we've gone on now for about 15 minutes on this subject. So,
what are we saying then?
I'm going to say McGee.
I was going to say McGee just because he put Reading on the map to a certain extent
when we were nobodies. But any one of them, I think if you look at all of them have set the foundations for what we've got now, basically. All the ones that were successful, anyway.
McGee just edges out Pardew.
And then Koppel. Again, and people say, well, the guy won the league with 106 points. But as I said, it's looking at important. And
where Pardew took Reading from to where they went to. Because there's nothing to say Reading couldn't have gone the way of other teams that have built big stadiums and gone downhill.
Look at Bradford. Look at Darlington. Existence.
Oh yeah, Jesus. Brilliant signing, wasn't it?
Even lower down, you look at teams like Russian Diamonds that have tried to capture the dream and have lost it. And as I said, took us up there and really got us into a good position and bought some of the players that really laid the foundation for Koppel's team as well, the likes of Sidwell and I can't remember how did you say Sidwell?
I think
you might have.
I think
done.
He
Harper
did.
And player Murty, Shorey.
Already there.
Yeah, Shorey, players like that.
Mm.
You know, he really did a good job. So those two for me, and then Koppel and then probably McDermott.
Yeah, it's difficult. You could pick any one of them, really. I think the argument is they all are a major part of what we've got now. And what we were talking earlier, the problem is if you have a bad run, do we have another bad manager and then have to fight our way back up again? That's a concern, because if you look at history, that's the way it's pretty much worked.
Okay, well, as I said, we've gone on for much longer than I thought there.
Yeah, it's going to be a short one, but it'll be a long
indeed.
One.
Indeed. So, your thoughts, who you think Reading's most important manager? You can email us into thetilehurstend@gmail.com, get us on Twitter @thetilehurstend, or our Facebook page is facebook.com/thetilehurstend. But now let's move on to some of the people that have used those contact details to send emails into us.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
@thetilehurstend
and facebook.com/thetilehurstend.
Right, welcome back. Time for your tweets, emails and bits of bobs. I just gave out the contact details the other side of the sting, so hopefully you're all aware of them. But I'll give them out at the end for those of you that are still managing to stay with us through this fine show. Right, let's move straight on then. Royalty Points says, really think Adkins should consider bringing Hector in for either of our centre-backs. Both are dreadful when we're chasing a game, as they're so limited on the ball. Ironically, Pierce said we shouldn't be so direct when we're losing. He's one of the main culprits. Perhaps he was just repeating what Nigel Adkins had told them. But it was just like Wigan, Forest and Bournemouth. No lessons have been learned by the looks of things.
Oh, I'd have to agree with that. It's funny, yeah, Pierce is one of the most direct players we've got and he's telling us not to do it. It looks like Adkins has abandoned the keeper at the back and play it around, and probably rightly so. And now we're banging it long, everyone's moaning about that. So maybe a combination of the two might be a good idea.
Yeah, and Adam Dove goes on, another one, to talk about the centre-backs, saying, surely Saturday's game with Yeovil was the best time to give Hector a full game. Pierce still looking shaky and Yeovil being bottom of the table.
The funny thing is, though, it's nothing that I haven't said since the start of the season. We knew that Gawkes and Pierce are clumsy and can't turn. It's no surprise to anyone to see. I don't know why they're getting the blame particularly, because I didn't think we'd give Blackburn many opportunities to score. It was just one ridiculous break that cost us. That was it. But, again, they're not the best two, and I think maybe, give Hector a game, why not?
Yeah, I think he's very, very close. But it's difficult now because Reading should have a very easy day, theoretically, against Yeovil. So the two centre-backs aren't going to be tested, so they'll be kept on.
So it's whether Nigel Adkins is proactive and says, I think this is going to be a better partnership for us. But then again, who'd be a manager? Because he's going to be down if he does and down if he doesn't. If he changes it and goes well, it's great. If he changes it and goes badly,
then his head's on the block.
Yeah, he's upset. Whoever he's dropped, he's upset. The fans will say, "Well, why did you change it?" And so it's tough.
Well, he's going to get to it, obviously, the other game, but it is an opportunity for him to say, "Look, I think you looked a bit tired this week, lads. So I'm going to give some others a run." You know what I mean? We'll talk about it later, but I think that's what he might do.
Exactly right. Well, Hoop said Guthrie should only play on Saturday for us if it's a 3-man midfield.
We've had this discussion about Guthrie. I think sometimes he's a little bit anti-football.
Yeah, and Daniel Brattermark says Guthrie in for Akpan and Blackman for McEnough. And again, for me, that just leaves the midfield exposed.
Yeah, Akpan didn't cover himself in glory. I wouldn't have said this week his passing was a bit wayward again. You can't knock his endeavour, but I think it gives, we're probably going to talk about it, but it gives Adkins the opportunity to put Guthrie back in his side, which I think he wants to do anyway.
It's difficult. Guthrie is a question, and he's a player, a bit like Royston Genta, that's going to divide fans. Some people will be his biggest fans, and other people will say he's the main culprit for why we're going wrong.
I don't knock his quality. I still think he's probably technically the best midfielder we've got, but he just there's something about him that just is sometimes a little bit anti-football, and we've covered it quite a bit.
We've said on other shows, Reading have got to find a formation to suit Guthrie rather than Guthrie coming in to fit whatever Reading's plan is.
Yeah. And as the way things have been going, is things have been going all right, and we've had a bad result this week, and we had a good result last week. People don't remember bad results, though, don't they? And they'll probably chuck him in this, but I'm sure he's going to get a game this week instead of Akpan.
I hope. Gets one more game to show what he can do.
Well, I think it just gives him the opportunity, you know what I mean? Because he's thinking, we can turn Yeovil over, we should be beating them. So if I put Guthrie back in, it's a good opportunity to reintroduce him.
It's very harsh, though, to basically tear up a team after basically... Because they basically have only had one bad game. They lost to Ipswich and they played quite well. Sheffield Wednesday, red card game.
Yeah. This is the first time in 2 months we've sat here and gone, that's pretty useless.
I completely agree with you. I'm just saying, I think that you might want to get Guthrie back in the side, and this is a good opportunity to put him back in because they should win, in theory.
Yeah, I said he would be a manager. Joe Stevenson, regular... listen to the show. Thanks very much for tweeting in again, Joe. He says, are you worried about the contract talk stalls? I'm aware we're low on cash, but could lose some key players if we don't get promoted. And I think, unfortunately, we've covered that So go back and listen to that bit of the show. But yeah, it's, I think we just said in between these parts,
it's a bit scary.
Next year when you look at it, it's very scary.
Yeah, we could have,
could be very busy in the summer podcasts, put it that way. By the way, we are doing summer podcasts, so not hitting the beach. We did a few.
Okay, we did a few. If people are still listening to us by then, people might have completely given up. We'll see. We'll see.
Do them live from the beach.
Yeah.
Right, moving on. Phil Saunders said, if we went up,
who out of the current Adkins 11 would you think about immediately replacing?
If we went up out of the current 11?
Probably quickest.
You keep McCleary, you keep the keeper, you keep Gunter.
You'd probably keep Lafondra.
You
keep the job he can do.
I'd probably keep Pogrebniak.
Other than that. Oh, Williams. Williams and Abita, yeah. Other than that, that's it.
Basically, I think
you'd lose both centre backs at the moment.
Yeah, Akpan. I think you'd keep Pearce as a squad, but I don't think you'd want to be.
Oh yeah, keeping the 11. I don't think I'd keep Lafondra in 11, but I would keep him in the squad. Yeah.
Mm.
So that seems so. McCarthy would keep, Abita you'd keep, but maybe not as left back in the Premier League.
I think it depends. Are you going to get his any better? Left backs or a premium.
If someone
really.
Like Ryan Bertrand came available,
though. Different. Yeah.
So you keep that.
I said Pearce and Gorks maybe not in that first 11. Gunter, deserve another go round?
Yeah, I think he's
worth a shot.
McCleary, yeah.
Williams, yeah. Akpan, no. Probably not. Guthrie?
I don't know.
So I think the jury's still out on him. I really do.
Who's that leave? Mackenough?
No.
No. That was quick.
That was a resounding no there.
Pogrebniak?
Yeah.
And Lafondra? I'd keep him, but probably not start him.
I wouldn't start him.
Okay, so
hopefully that answers your question there, Phil. Simon Edwards says, well, the World Cup due, Pog and Williams be trying their best to get the planes to Brazil, which can only benefit us, don't you think?
Maybe not. Maybe they don't want to get injured and play in the World Cup.
I think Pog's quite a way off the Russian squad at the moment.
Yeah, he's away. I don't think you'll see.
Williams has got a good chance, though.
Yeah, he'll probably play. Pogrebniak is well down in the pecking order, so he'd be lucky to get to the World Cup. But I think, will it benefit us? It depends how you look at it, really. I think sometimes players might think, I want to play in a World Cup and won't go that extra yard. I'm not saying them too well. I'm sure they will because they've been doing it pretty much all season.
Yeah, I do feel a little bit sorry for Adam Federici, who's got a real chance of becoming Australia's number one with Schwarzer retiring. And he's kicking his heels sitting on the bench at Reading. So
again, we talked about this. Maybe he won't be next year. We'll see.
But by that point, World Cup
too late, yeah.
I'm slightly surprised he's not gone out on loan, even to like a League One club, just to be playing every week, but who knows. So thanks, Si. Essex 1871 says, sum up Reading's FC season so far in one word:
unpredictable.
Yeah,
pretty good.
So you can sum up most Championship sides season in one word: unpredictable.
Absolutely.
Bobby Hall,
lovely, says, another great performance from at the Tarlest End. Thanks, guys.
I've just posted on your Facebook page my experience of a match in Norway.
Yeah.
So yeah, go to thetarlestend.com.
Sorry, go to facebook.com/thetarlest end and you can read Bobby Hall's
experience in Norway.
It's something we mentioned last week about people who've watched games abroad. Yeah.
And thanks very much
for anyone who missed it.
Yeah, and thanks very much, Bobby, for going in. And so you can post stuff on our Facebook page. We've got a fan post feature on the actual website at thetarlestend.com. And as I said, just send us an email. If you just want to write something one off, literally just send us an email. Yeah. You know, you don't have to be a professional writer or an aspiring journalist. You might just be that you really want to write on a game you went to 20 years ago that really stuck in your mind.
Anything.
Exactly. We're very much open. So thetarlestend@gmail.com for that. And then we just had a couple of tweets as well. I don't know if you noticed it, because you sit further down the east stand, don't you?
Well, I sat right at the top this week.
Yeah, well,
I sit in Y25 every week. Mm-hmm. Give me away. I've got Wimbo on the back of my shirt.
Y21 I was in, so we're opposite ends.
Okay, well, I don't know if you saw it,
but there was a bit of, well, don't want to say argy-bargy, but there was a bit of confrontation between some Reading fans who wanted to stand up and stewards.
All right.
And it led to a couple of people getting chucked out.
And a couple of people have tweeted us on this. Joe Davey said, what did you think of the stewards on Saturday regarding Y25-26 standing? A loyal royal says, wish the Y25-26 fans would forget about the standing battle with the stewards and concentrate on backing the boys. I mentioned this as one of my 5 points in my 5 points from Blackburn. Again, which can be on the website. Getting as many plugs in as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And you see people every week in that part of the ground standing.
Yeah.
Some weeks the stewards leave them alone, some weeks they don't. And this week it just got a bit aggro-y. There were people shouting, you know, we pay your wages, we'll do what we want.
Right, yeah.
And all sorts of abuse getting hurled at the stewards. And it's easy to see it from both sides. For the fans that want to stand, they have to sit and look to their left and see fans standing up in the way end.
That's the thing.
And seeing the fact that other weeks they get away with it. But from the stewards' point of view, they've just been told to do their job.
Listen, they don't get paid a lot, the stewards. It's a tough job for them. They're told what to do. You've got seats. I think it's unfortunate. I know I'd love to stand at grounds like we used to, but health and safety is the way health and safety is. But the annoying thing about it is when you see the whole away stand do it, the whole match, and they only pick on the Reading fans because they know they've got something they can take away from them, and that's their season ticket, and that's chucking them out of the ground. It's not right, but I think it's difficult. You can say it from both sides of the coin, and normally I would stick up for the fans, but in these cases, I think the stewards are between a rock and a hard place.
Exactly. It's really hard for them. And I'm sure they don't enjoy it.
And I'm sure they don't want to do it.
No. And hopefully, as we've seen in the past couple of weeks, safe standing's very much come into the forefront again. The club have backed it. And we'll have an article up on it over the next couple of weeks, looking at both sides of the argument. But it just reinforces the notion that 20 years on from all-seater stadiums, fans still want to stand.
Yep.
And having that choice in a safe environment
can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Again, we discussed it earlier. Well, last week, I think we discussed it. It definitely needs looking at, and at least they're starting to listen now.
Yeah, and fingers crossed in the end that fans, as I said, don't focus on a war with stewards and they just want to get on back in the team.
Yeah, I think it's, again, losing doesn't help.
No, to be fair, it was probably the more entertaining bit of the first half.
Yeah, at least there was some entertainment.
Indeed. So I think we've had a couple of very late tweets.
Last gasp ones in.
Yeah. Alex Forbes says, do you guys think the coverage of the under-21s in the academy is good enough, or would you like some more realistic coverage, as it can be biased, and he loves the show.
Read an FC website, biased. I've read it quickly.
I think they do a pretty good job covering the under-21s and the 18s.
It's nice to hear about them, yeah.
Yeah, and they do put a lot of stuff on YouTube. I know they streamed the FA Youth Cup, and they've made moves to get more academy matches inside the grounds.
Yeah.
Look, let's get this honest. Reading's website is never going to really slag people off. It's just not going to do it. If you were running a website on your own business, you're not going to post a website an article saying we had a really bad month, we broke half of the things we've sold. We've had loads of complaints. Sorry. So Reading's website isn't going to do it. Yeah, maybe they push it a little bit too far on the positive side of things, but it's their remit. They've got a crate.
A positive atmosphere. Well, that's what we're here to sort of drag them down a little bit.
We try and focus on it where we can, but obviously getting access is tough because most of the games are at Hogwood. We can't see them, so it's hard for us to really look at it. So
you're kind of reduced to what it is.
But while the academy is important, and it is very important for the future, don't take too much notice of what's going on, because how many times have we heard about young players
we never see? Yeah,
exactly.
We're seeing when they're in the first team. That's when it's important.
Very nice to hear them doing well, and it's nice you do get a chance to see them in the FA Youth Cup and stuff. So I think they get the balance just about right.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things they do better, let's put it that way.
Thanks for that. Robert says he looked at, we've had an article up on Pavel Pogrebniak today, which is a good read. Pog was getting some stick in Y26 last Saturday. On his day, he's unplayable at this level.
Yeah, I thought he had a poor game, but in general I think he's had a decent season. I think a problem with strikers, and I think Chelsea are finding the same thing, that when you're not scoring, everyone focuses on them not putting the ball in it. They don't focus on the fact that they're putting in the work rate and not getting the surface sometimes.
Yeah, and he won player of the month on the website 3 months in a row.
Yeah, can't knock his effort this year, that's for certain. And we have done in the past. I've been one of the main contenders for that.
You not going to play a Westie?
You need to hear about it.
Speaking of knocking a player, Terry Tibbs says, I feel that the fans shouldn't blame Joby. He made a mistake, but the whole performance was poor. Again, I think we touched on that.
Yeah, it wasn't one player's mistake. It's the fact we didn't create enough, and that's why we didn't win the game.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was his mistake led to the goal, though. So that's why he's going to get singled out.
But if Abita would have got the ball over the ball and put the ball on there, then it wouldn't have happened in the first
possibly, time. But you still have to say McIntosh should have hooked that away.
Yeah, he should have done, but I thought it was a poor free kick, really.
Yeah, again, there's plenty of blame to go around, folks.
There's plenty to go around. Let's keep going. We can take that further back to the other exactly. Errors.
Yeah. The kickoff was terrible. I thought Queen Kingsley and Queensley didn't do a good enough job.
Not good enough. No.
Anyway, and finally, from Ben Raddy, who says, now is a great excuse after the loss last week to break at the back to give Hector a go. If you can't try Hector against Yeovil, with all due respect, who can you try him against in this league? And again, we
discussed it. Yeah.
So thank you very much for all your emails. Lots of them this week. And said thanks very, very much, because This podcast is by the fans, for the fans. It's your show. We want to give you a platform to talk about stuff and put questions to us. So across the week, again, if you use the Twitter hashtag TTE podcast, it'll get to us a lot easier. But if you tweet us in general at the Tarlhurst End, send us an email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com or go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/Tarlhurst End. You'll get to us. And just very, very quickly, before we move on to any other business, did have one email a couple of weeks ago. I apologise to the guy who sent it in for not reading out this last week. But you may remember a couple of weeks ago, we did the fantasy draft, which I won. Mm. And we'd said to listeners, why don't you have a go? See if you can play along. And one person did that, and Pete did, and sent us to his team that he came up with. And obviously, he was very much hamstrung by the fact that he can have anyone weird picked. But he still came up with this team, and what did you make of this team, Westy? He had Francis in goal, Ray Ranson at right back, Ian Hart left back, Jeff Hopkins and Keith McPherson at centre backs. On the right, Scott Taylor, Kevin Dillon and Kevin Watson in the middle, Gareth McCleary on the left, and Lovell and Morley up front, with Bevan, Nogan and Brebner on the bench.
Okay, well, again, he didn't have a lot to choose from.
I think it's a half-decent side.
Francis was a good player. He was a good goalkeeper in his day, for those who remember him. Ray Ranson was at the back end of his career. He was steady.
Two championship left back of the year, 2 years in a row.
Well, it's just good one. Night. We've had this discussion before. Hopkins and McPherson.
McPherson was underrated.
Yeah, they were steady, the pair of them. Scott Taylor was good. Dillon was very good, ball player. Watson was a ball player. I don't think they'd work together, but yeah, the McCleary we know about. Lovell scored plenty of goals, and Morley I used to love, just because he was one of those players that if you played against him, you must absolutely hate him.
He scored a lot of goals.
He did score a lot of goals.
Kind of goes under the radar a bit.
So awkward to play against. And I think my best memory of him, and this is why I'd say he was a proper man's man, contrary to the rumours, he took a fractured skull. And as he was walking off the pitch with a fractured skull, he pointed at the bloke and basically told him what he thought of him. And then he had to have a metal plate put in his head. And you don't see them sort of footballers anymore. That's a proper man, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Credit to you, Trevor. I remember him scoring against Southampton in a cup tie. It was great.
I didn't score over a kick as well. He's got lots of brilliant goals.
Yeah.
And he's brave as a lion.
Ooh, Trevor Morley.
Yeah, brave as a lion.
Great. On the bench as well, I like Lee Nogan. My dad always used to write, he makes a joke that he reckons he was worth 50p. But for that goal at Wembley.
Yeah, it was good.
That's Messi, seriously. That's Messi scores that goal at Wembley. You see that for 20 years.
Nogan was excellent, I thought. And I don't know how Brebner got in there, but Bevan.
He had one good season. He was probably one of Burns' better.
He put the ball in there. I'll give him that.
Yeah. Right, so thanks very much, Sid, for all those emails and tweets. And you know the contact details. But before we go, we'll have a quick look ahead to the Yeovil game as well as any other business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. Any other business.
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. As said, main Any Other Business bit of the day is looking ahead to Yeovil. We've touched on the team, really.
Yeah.
Can see the argument for making changes. Personally, I'm for keeping it as it is. And I think they'll get the job done.
I personally would maybe make one change, maybe two. But yeah, I can see why. I think he will use this opportunity to make the changes that he wants for the team that he thinks is better in his own mind. Is it harsh on the players that we're playing? Yeah, I think it is, because, again, it's one bad result when they've beat QPR the week before. I think he put Guthrie back in. He might even put McAdoo on the bench. I don't know. Maybe he won't, but I think definitely Guthrie will come and throw back pan. And I think that might be the one change that he will definitely make.
This will tell us a lot about Nigel Adkins and his relationship with his players, I think, for how he goes with the team on Saturday. Because, I mean, rumour has it that basically this team and this style came about because the players went to him after the Middlesbrough game and said, look, let us try and play this way.
Yeah, we can't do this, yeah.
So if he makes changes and it works, then he's proved his managerial mettle. If he changes it and it doesn't work, then you really got to ask questions about it.
I think he can't win either way, because if he doesn't change it after a defeat, everyone will say, well, why didn't you put Guthrie in? Why didn't you put Al Robson-Kanu in? If you keep the team as it is and they get beat,
It's the worst game for him in a way, because you're playing bottom of the league at home.
Yeah.
So even if you thought maybe this team isn't doing as well as it should do, it should still win on Saturday.
Oh, you should be winning Saturday.
So it's a case of, does he preempt a hard game by changing it for a softer game, or does he stick with what it is and then potentially risk going into a harder game with a weaker team? I don't know if that's made sense. I'm a bit tired.
Yeah. I think we know Yeovil will come and sit in, because they'd be happy to get a point like a lot have recently.
Yeah.
I think it might be an opportunity to play a more attacking side.
Yeah. Many ways. Yeovil will know mugs as well. I went out to Huish Park at the start of the season and Yeovil deserved to win that game. Oh, Reading got very lucky with a Lafondre penalty.
Yeah.
And I've watched them a couple of times on TV as well. I watched them against Leeds the other week and I thought they had a very good first half. Mm. They're good, you know, they put in a lot of good set pieces and they have the ability to hurt you. They're just a bit weak in holding on to Leeds and they do tire.
Yeah.
So you'd think Reading have enough to get past them, but they shouldn't underestimate them.
No, the problem is, can Reading stretch them like I was talking about earlier? Can Reading stretch them when they need to and get a goal up? Because if they go a goal behind, I think Yeovil will sit in and then we will have a problem.
But I think Reading have only won once when they've fallen behind with Nigel Atkins.
Yeah. Well, again, because we can't stretch teams, and that's why we struggle.
But I don't think we've lost when we've been ahead.
Yeah, again, we're good, decent players. And when teams have to come at us, then we can play a bit more.
As Bolton and Blackpool found out.
And Millwall and QPR to an extent.
Yeah. But you're worried that Yeovil will come and sit in and Reading won't be able to break them down.
Fingers crossed they will. I think they'll have enough. In terms of score predictions, I'm gonna go optimistic. I'm going to say they'll win 4-1.
Oh, I think tight. I think 1-0.
1-0. Okay, both predict wins again, which usually spells
doom. Good. There's only two of us predicting wins this week. Might be able to break the curse.
Well, we'll speak to Charles on Friday for the podcast extra, and I'll give him a nudge to try and pick
draw at least.
Right, so that's about that. In terms of any other little bits and pieces, all I can do is just encourage you to go and visit the website. Loads of great articles up, guys. I said we've got one on Pavel Pogrebniak. We've got our five things up for Blackburn. We've got a loan report going up in the next few minutes. And loads of other bits and pieces updated every single day. We're aiming to get new content up on the site. So head over to thetarlhurstend.com. You can still use thetarlhurstend.co.uk. It'll get you to the same place. And as I said, by all means, please get in touch with us. If you've got any article ideas, want to contribute, want to get in touch about the podcast, loads to do. And yeah, TT Podcast Extra will be up on Friday. We'll ask to speak to Charles to get all the latest on the takeover and whatnot. But meanwhile, I think that's about it from us.
We've done a good job there between us, mate, I think.
We have. We've soldiered on through.
Despite being undermanned.
Very undermanned, but we've got through the 90 minutes.
I think it's literally going to be 90 minutes. But no, thank you very much for listening. As I say, we'll be back next week. I don't know if it will be released on Wednesday or Thursday. We'll have to look at our very busy diaries.
Very busy schedule.
All our celebrity commitments to do now with big radio stars.
Yeah, superstars.
Going to the Oscars, BAFTAs, all that nonsense. But yeah, you can find out. We'll tweet you all the updates. But thank you very much to everyone who got in touch, everyone who's listened, and we'll speak to you next week. Go on, you arse.
Till next week.